Welcome to the Thinking is Material podcast, where we delve into the dynamic intersections of art, design and research. I'm your host, Dr. Joanna Lee, an academic and artist researcher at Leeds Beckett University in the north of England. This podcast explores how thinking itself manifests as a material process in approaches to research, emphasising the creative acumen and adaptability that define the methods of today's creative practitioners. As a mover and drawer, I have always explored how thinking is materialised through research methods. It is inspired by Tim Ingold's Thinking and Acquiring Knowledge on the Move, where thought is woven into how we move, act and learn. The podcast aims to expand an approach of thinking on the move and engage with the stuff of social and political and cultural concerns as materials that matter. This year's series, I will be talking to art and design researchers within the research cluster Participate, nestled in the vibrant Leeds Art Research Centre at Leeds Beckett University and going wider than the arts school to include researchers from other areas. Today we are speaking to Priscilla Benny, who is a PhD candidate at the Federal University of Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil, in the Informatics in Education programme, also referred to as Computing and New Technologies in Education. She holds a master's degree in business administration with a focus on entrepreneurship and innovation, and is doing her doctorate research in the overlooked area of neurodivergent adults. She has been visiting LBU to discuss her research with Dr. Mark Fabry, who works in this area. Today, we're venturing into a fascinating narrative around her research, into how self-knowledge about autistic traits can promote self-advocacy and inclusion by identifying strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats related to these traits. In this episode, we'll discuss how inclusion is a process that begins with self-knowledge, followed by self-advocacy to meet our needs. Ultimately, she concludes, inclusion is a collaborative effort between us and our environment. Whether you're a postgraduate student, an academic, or a researcher, this discussion is tailored for you as we peel back the layers of this compelling research, igniting conversations on innovation, creativity, and the evolving landscape of art and design research. So grab your notebooks and settle in as we explore how our creative processes not only inform our practice, but also shape the very fabric of knowledge itself. Let's dive in. Is it Benny?
Benny, yes.
Benny, okay. Benny. Okay. Hello, Priscilla. Very nice to have you on the podcast, Thinking is Material. We have with us today Priscilla Benny, who is a PhD candidate at the Federal University of Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil. We've invited her here today because of a very interesting research, which is exploring self-knowledge about autistic traits and how they can promote self-advocacy and inclusion. But before we go any further, Priscilla, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself before we even get into the research part?
All right. So, hello, everyone. I'm Priscilla. I'm from Brazil, PhD candidate. Let's say I'm on the spectrum. I was diagnosed when I was 21, but at that time, the doctor just said to me, oh, you have, like, at the time it was Asperger's. He said, oh, don't worry, you got into the university and you have some friends. Don't care about this. Your main problem is ADHD. So I just forgot that information until my nephew was born. So from that point on, I think that I was someone just trying to adapt at first and survive in this world. And then I had like some health issues, and since then I've been trying to build my own identity based on who I am really am, like being authentic. So I'm in this process, like stop masking, camouflage stuff, and trying to be myself. Like I used to be a really good is, let's say, is bitter. Like,
yeah.
And now after the burnout, I feel like shy and all the time like introverted because it's from my nature, let's say, like this. And so I'm this person that is building, constructing, developing her own identity through the spectrum.
Your burnout, was this prior to you doing the PhD? Was it before your PhD?
The first one was, but the second one was in my first year as a PhD student, yes. And I think because I had one in the past, and then plus COVID issues, like post-COVID, and one more burnout during the first year of PhD, like suffering some abuse from people like my ex-mentor, and you know, that led me to be in a high level of stress, and then my body couldn't handle anymore, so I burnt out again.
So is this what you would call autistic burnout, if we were looking at more sort of, you know, maybe how doctors would phrase it? Would they call it an autistic burnout, or do you consider it was just burnout?
No, this was the kind of burnout that gives you the autistic individual regression. For neurotypical people, a burnout has some set of symptoms, but for autistic people, it's pretty much different. And even the doctors, the literature about, academical literature about, is really rare. And like, if you go to the social media forums, even some professionals, the rare professionals, at least in Brazil, that works with adults, we talk a lot about burnout, this kind of burnout that gives you some kind of regression, like you lose some skills. This was an important point on my presentation yesterday, because everything, my search for answers about why I was struggling in life, it started because I knew that what I had wasn't just like issues, memory because I'm aging, or, you know, hormones or anxiety or depression. No, I knew that was something more. And when I started to look for it, I figured out that there is so 1,000 people that had exactly the same things. Like, we lost some skills that we developed during our lives, and they just disappear because your brain just really burned. And since some things for us are not naturally, it's not like the neurotypical people has some things, for example, they learn by instinct, a social skill, and autistic individual, no. So after a burnout, you can lose those skills, like just happened to me, or you can lose some cognitive skills, or you can lose some other many skills. Like, it will depend on the person, but there are some people, for example, on Quora, you know, some social media that people talk a lot, they chat like without fear, because your name doesn't appear, read it or Quora. So in my presentation, I listed some comments from people speaking about burnout in social media. For example, IT engineer mentioned that he got a burnout, and he couldn't left the house for 2 years because he really lost his skills, like skills that are really needed to take care of yourself by going out. Another one just mentioned that he was or she used to be a successful scientist, but then they got a burnout. They lose so many skills that now he or she or they are living in the mother's basement at the age of 35 years old, being just able to take care of basic, like, but struggling to take care of basic needs. So, and once that you have this thing and you don't know what it is and why this is happening, because it's not written anywhere, it's not written in the academic literature, the doctors don't know about it, and we can't treat it. Yeah. So we just got into a dark, really dark, moment without support, without everything, just because of burnout. So many people are misdiagnosed.
Okay.
Like going to the doctor and they just said, oh, you have anxiety or depression, but instead it is a burnout. Because you can do things that you were able to do before, like, really well.
Okay. Can I just go back a little bit to what this burnout looks like when it's happening? So you've said about the loss or the regret, a loss of skills and the regression that happens after a burnout. But what does an autistic burnout look like?
It will depend on the person, because, the spectrum, it's a spectrum. So I have a set of traits. My friend, which is on the spectrum, has other set of traits. So a burnout can affect everyone in a different way. But let's say that basically we have some traits that are pattern, like pretty much the same with all of us. For example, the sensory issues about light or sounds or taking the things in a literal way, like people say things to you and you really think that is like that. So this is another trait that is common to almost all of us. So I can give an example among the traits. For example, the sensory issues. You used to handle being in places with there is like some sort of people, for example, an office. And after the burnout, that light or sound that used to bother you a bit, but you could self-regulate somehow. After a burnout, you can handle not even 10%. It's really hard, because that skill that you learn, or the way that you self-regulated before, you basically, that strategy is not enough after a burnout. Yes, a burnout.
So the drop between coping and the tolerance level, that's a steep drop then, isn't it, through burnout? Maybe being able to tolerate some of those things, maybe being able to cope. On the other side of burnout, that causes it to go. So if I knew someone with autism and they'd seemingly handled some things quite well, but they perhaps stopped wanting to do some of the things they'd done before, or they were withdrawing from some of those environments, would that be a way of recognizing that there may be a burnout happening?
We must, in this situation, I think that if you are considering whether you have it's a burnout, or for example, yeah, anxiety or depression, the line point will be, if you don't want to do something, but you still can do it, but you just don't want to because you don't have the strength, you don't have dopamine, yeah, you don't have serotonin, you don't, like, but you can yeah, because you can. That's not burnout. An autistic burnout, like the worst, with regression, which is the one that's really hard on us. But if you try to do that thing and you don't do it because you can't, in English is really can't, not being able, because you don't yeah, know how. That's a burnout. You don't know okay, how. You unlearned. I don't know if this word exists.
Yeah, unlearned's a good word.
Just
yeah,
unlearned. Unlearned. Yeah. I will give you an example. I will try to just literally translate it. But for example, when I met my boyfriend and we were talking online, for example, before we met in person, mm-hmm, he told me that I like craft beer and I am right now I'm in a bar and I don't remember the name of the bar, mm-hmm, and he says, oh, I love this place, this beer, I don't know the word to
the atmosphere.
No, and he said something like, it's because in Portuguese it makes sense, but you know that word when you own a bar, like you were like the owner.
Honored or on?
Yeah, but in Portuguese there is an idiom, like you said, when you go to a place so often, yeah, you like the place, you use the word, oh, I own this place, but you don't know it, you go there so often. So
does it feel like home? Huh? Does it feel a bit, because it's familiar, does it feel like home a bit? Because
yes, yeah. But in Portuguese it has a meaning like, oh, I'm the owner, like I'm the eu sou sócio, I'm the
yeah, sócio. Okay.
But then I thought, why is he's like, he's an owner that just invests the money but doesn't work, and why? He works with computing, he's a professor, but because in somewhere in my brain, I just forgot that is an idiom. And I learned this idiom when I was a kid, and I just forgot because I took it literally, you know?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Completely literally.
Yeah.
So I lost the capacity. It was just, I knew that idiom, but now I take everything to the literal way again.
So that's a very, very subtle thing to suddenly find a small thing that you understand, that you've learned, and to suddenly find that you haven't understood it, and then you feel you should know it because it is something you learned, but you, like you say, you've just unlearned it. So that's quite hard, isn't it? Because those are things that are not visible necessarily to everybody else around you. So you can be experiencing a loss or a regression, and people around you may not know or be able to support you, because it can be a very small.
Even the individual don't know what's going
That's
on.
That's interesting.
Because many people doesn't know about the burnout, autistic burnout, only like some people on the spectrum that participate on social groups or have yeah, many friends or WhatsApp groups and yeah, social media, because we support a lot one each other in the groups. So you heard about it, because you saw someone comment, then you can try to associate, oh, perhaps yeah, that's what I have, and you try to talk to someone that you know. That's what will happen to me, mm-hmm, because I only realized this was a burnout after I started to talk to people on the spectrum, that had a burnout, or people, some people that right now, like, they are my friends now, but at the time they were just professionals that I found, and they knew what was, and it was really hard to find them. And so you just think sometimes that you're getting crazy. So I thought that I was getting crazy, because I knew, for example, to go somewhere and know that place is dangerous, like it's that like has a right high rate of violence in that city, for example, and you just I just didn't, you know, I forget about it. It's just, it's a kind of skill that you develop. Oh, this place is safe, this place is not. Like, you develop this kind of skills. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Then they are gone. Another example would be, because this seems not to be so important, but they are, for example, since I have always worked with people.
Yeah.
I worked in like big companies, multinational companies, in marketing, a sales area. So I developed many social skills, and I learned things about people, like when people are telling the truth or not, they are trying to convince you, you know, that kind of malicious thing that in business perhaps you must have to figure out what's going on, and, you know, this kind of thing. It's a skill. And this kind of skill, like knowing if someone, analogy, if someone is being malicious with you or not, I lost you. So I was more vulnerable to be abused because I couldn't recognize the danger of being with people that are not really nice, or they are taking advantage of me. So this is really danger. And sometimes you just not lose your social skills, but also the cognitive skills, for example. Don't remember, you know, you've been in a place so many times, you just don't remember how to go to that place, or you take so long to do something that you should do in minutes, and you don't know from where to start. That's a burnout.
Okay.
Because it's really a regression. Like.
So this is, I mean, I think the way you've explained this is really helpful, because you've actually opened up how this is a serious issue, and one that's not very visible. And it's serious from, I guess, it's, you know, never mind for the individual having regressions, it also means that other people might not spot that in others, but it also means the individual themselves might not see it, which leaves them very vulnerable.
I think that you only start to see it when it's like in a high level, because when you really realize that you lost some things, that something is missed, just gone. Like something really important, because maybe the small things, like, for example, I used to, okay, I don't like salt or too much sugar on my food. But when I am in someone else's house, for example, my mother, she used to add a lot of salt. But since I don't go there so often, like every day, so I can handle. And now I can't handle anymore, because it's too sensitive. And also in a place with a lot of noise and not be bothered, for example, there is something that many autistic people has, that you can't follow parallel conversations, because you don't know which conversation you should follow. So to put a group of more than, you know, five people, it's too much. But since I worked many years in social areas, and I teach also at the university. And so I handled this. I used to handle this very well. But now I can't. I can't. I developed some ways, like quick way, like, okay, there's more people here than that's supposed to be, but it's something that you don't think about. Oh, I will handle, you know, it's quick and fast because you can do it.
Yeah.
Because you developed it. And now I can't again.
Okay. So that brings us to your research then. It completely makes sense why you are researching this. And can you tell us a little bit how you're researching this issue?
Actually, my research is more about the autistic hidden traits.
Okay.
Yeah, there. But I end up in the traits because of because I was really wondering why we struggling so much in the adult life. And then I figure out that it's like a process. Oh, you age and then you lose your some skills or some strategy are not enough anymore, and your health start to deteriorate with time. And also when you age, you have more responsibilities, so more pressure, stress, anxiety. And then you have, for example, if you're not working in a friendly environment with nice people, not doing what you like, or so many other variables, and then you have a burnout. And then the co-occurring conditions, like it's conditions that autistic people has a predisposition to have, for example, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, things like that they just appear, and it becomes something that was small, is just something big now, and you start struggling like one after the another, and people lose their jobs, their relationships, and everything. So I was wondering, because I was struggling, why I can do this again. Like, I used to write a paper in a week, a really good paper, because I'm such a good writer, and I can't do it anymore. Why? Mm-hmm. And looking for the answers and talking to people, reading people comments, I figure out that no, the autistic, being autistic must be more than the things that are on the literature about autism. I mean, the DSM, which is the Bible of the magical, that it's a manual to describe the mental health, mental problems, like neurodevelopmental disorders are there. When a doctor, if you go a consult and you have depression, the doctor will use the DSM criteria to diagnose you. So that is the Bible. And when you got that Bible, you see some autistic traits. They really make sense. But I thought this is not enough to give us this struggling. This is not enough.
Okay, so it's got very big gaps that you yourself have experienced, and you're looking at that list, and you know it's just not even, it's not explaining the full story.
Yeah, it's not just that, and also the lack of support, because many professionals, let's say clinicians, and they don't know autism at all, and even worse, they don't know anything about autism in adulthood. It's really bad today. Let's say it urges for solutions and answers, because they don't know. The focus during decades in autism research is about the childhood. But we grow up and we have the same issues if we didn't have support. So what happened?
Yeah. in this country, we have, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You're just making me understand there's a system for support of children with mental health issues called CAMHS. I can't remember what that stands for, but basically, it kids that may be diagnosed with autism might go through that process. They may receive some support, but at 18, there's a cutoff. At 18, that ends. And all that happens is they get told to make a phone call, and you can talk to someone on a phone when you need to. And all the responsibility for coping with all those things suddenly falls on you, which, of course, that's it's kind of a ridiculous thing to ask of them to do, because not everybody with autism is ever going to just pick up a phone and phone a number and say, I need some help and support now. And so, yes, I can see why 18-year-olds and plus, they're just abandoned in an adult system of life without proper support.
Yeah, we have two problems there. First of all, it's ASD doesn't have a cure, so it's lifelong caring. But okay. No one, this is just a term, a word that I just made up, but lifelong caring.
I love it.
And we could have that, and we don't. Yeah. And the second issue, which is something that relates to my study, is that all the support and assessments that are made in this kind of support, like, for example, this mm-hmm. department, we have one in Brazil too, but really, really it's still in the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. but I think that many countries, they have this, but the problem is they develop, they create the support based on the researches, based on the medical literature. And the medical literature is about the DSM. So since the DSM only lists, let's say, 60% of our traits, or
yeah,
it's not everything there, people can think about ideas to give us support for some traits that we might need, for example, not some social skill to deal with anxiety, or when you are in public, or things like that. They just ignore. They are really, because they don't know. The policymakers, those people that made the strategy, they don't know, because it's a gap. That's a gap that I found. Like, I found hidden traits diving into the classical literature on autism, which means the classical, the pioneers, which are Grunia Sukrajevo, Hans Asperger, and Leo Kerner.
Okay.
I listed more than 200 traits, and these traits are not in DSM. So, yeah. And when
can I just recap that? Are you so, first of all, I loved your phrase, magical literature. This idea that the magical literature that we base all our strategies for support on is actually not so magical, because it's got huge gaps in it. But you're saying that some of those gaps might have been there if we'd attended to the pioneers and their 200 traits list more, if we'd paid attention to that.
Exactly. When I finished the first part of my let's say revising this literature and the first analysis, my first thought were, oh, I have to tell the world this is wrong. I have to tell to the DSM they are wrong. But I thought, I am not on the health science. I am no one in this field. And I can't really, as being an autistic person, I can't really wait for them to realize that it has more that has been hiding, and they should look it carefully and add the traits on the DSM, because they really could help to diagnose adults that are unrecognized as autistic, and also help to develop better interventions and treatments. Yeah. And I decided that I will not be that person, because I'm not from this field. And what I really do is something that can help people to assess these traits, to acknowledge these traits, and to check if whether they have an impact, a negative impact in their lives, and if they have, to figure out how to improve, like how to get the specific needs. Because I will give you an example. Yesterday on the presentation, we did a really nice activity about, because the things that these amazing researchers, Kerner, Asperger, and Tsukraeva, they listed, because they follow this, their kids, like the sample, hundreds. Each one of them had hundreds of kids in their hospital schools that they follow since they were 3-4 years old until they got the adulthood life.
Wow.
Even some almost 40 years old.
Wow, that's a huge durational study, isn't it? That's a huge, that's a lifetime study, isn't it?
Yeah, but this, Grunia Tsukraeva, unfortunately, she was only acknowledged in the west side of the world recently. Actually, when her first paper was translated into English, it didn't get the impact that it should have.
Okay.
So in the last 3 or 4 years, some researchers are shedding the light of her work. And also Asperger's has some other papers or notes that he left about the kids that he diagnosed as autism pathology, which is the name that Asperger gave. But it's there, it's written, and no one is looking. For example, a trait that really is important in adulthood.
Yeah.
The three pioneers listed that the kids they were observing, they are pedantic. Being pedantic is not a nice thing. Like, because we have some rigid brains. Sometimes we can see only white and black.
Yeah.
We can't see the gray, especially if no one taught us to see the gray, if we didn't have the support. We grow up seeing black and white. So we are really honest. It's one of autistic people's traits is to be honest. And another thing is to be really rational. Like, we have this part of our brain really well developed, the rational part, the neurocortex part. Whereas we have like some, let's say, problems in the limbic part that controls the emotion. So the problem is you are very intelligent, like here, rational, but your emotions doesn't come out the way it's supposed to be. But being a pedantic person in childhood will be that kids that will be called as a spoil or overreacting or just annoying kids. But in adult life, this could be the person that is judgmental, a person that always wants things the way they like, and they can't really see another way to do things, because sometimes you only see that way because it's the way you think is more rational. that it's the right way. It could be the let's say the right way, but things in the world are not black and white. You have the gray. You have each person feels and see the world in different ways. So when you were pedantic on your values, your principles, it could be a nice thing if you have good values or principles, but if you don't, or being pedantic and doing things like if someone says, oh, this is not healthy, you shouldn't eat that. Oh, all right, but only on Saturdays I will eat. But no, it's not healthy. And you will be sick because of it. You can't. You know that you can't. The doctor said, "Don't take it." So
no, they become very absolute.
So that person will be the person that people don't want to be close with. That you don't know your heart. For example, in a workplace environment where people are competing, and also colleagues, that is difficult to make friends, like really good friendships, people will call you, it will stereotype you, like that person that, you know, it's not good. So also in social, like we just met at the university, we are colleagues, I'm a professor here too, and we just met, you don't know my heart. You don't know I'm a good person. I have good values. I'm kind. And we just met. And just because we are really honest, which is another trait that you have to work on, that you can't like be that honest all the time, because people sometimes don't want to listen the truth. It's just to have some support, you know, just to say, I have my hair cut and, did you like it? Oh, yes. Just, you know, things
so
are
no, nice. No tact, no tact, but no social.
Maybe if you are pedantic, you just say, oh, but, and, oh, you know, you went to that salon hair again and you knew that is not good. You need to charge a high price, but, and they don't do like a nice work. So supposing that you said, oh, I think I didn't like my new hair or my new, you know, I didn't like this, the result, instead of supporting, no, it's nice, because that's what friends do. You just will turn it on your trait being honest, because you just, no one taught you that in social skill, like in social environments, you should just give people some support, and you will be pedantic, like saying, no, you should have gone to the salon hair that I gave to you the address. Why did you go to the other place? You knew they are.
Okay. So that's, brutal honesty, as we might call it. So I'm just wondering, Priscilla, then, in terms of, you're wanting to reveal more of these traits in your research, and I guess I'm curious now, because you said you were going to be researching and working. I thought you were going to be working with groups or with people about this generating more self-knowledge. So people can have more, people with autism can have more advocacy for themselves, and that self-knowledge will help them. So, can you tell me a little bit about how you're going about that?
This will be the final result if my study proves that if you acknowledge this kind of traits that is the literature, like being pedantic, and you acknowledge that, and you can see, oh my God, I didn't know that I didn't know I do this, and this is bad because no one taught me. So what I'm doing now, that I figure out all the traits and list it, and I will try to develop let's say a technological tool
Okay.
where people can access to through social stories, stories just like this one, but
how lovely,
written in a nice, neutral, inclusive way.
Yeah.
To so the autistic individual will answer some, after reading the stories, answer some questions, like say, oh, this happened, have you ever seen you in this kind of situation? If yes, how frequent? And then the tool will work, like the mathematical and programming part will give you a SWOT matrix, of your traits. Like after you read many stories, social stories, you answer how frequently these traits are in your life. The tool will give you a SWOT, listed your strengths, like one side your strengths, the other side some weaknesses, and the other side weaknesses that if they are, like, if you work on that, it can become strength, like the hyper focus. And some are some traits that are threat and you need help. Like help you can figure out by yourself. You need like intervention, like a doctor, a psychologist, someone to help you. So I think that once that you know you have your SWOT profile, you can start work on what you need to start to not being a pedantic, or
so there's two things that you've said like that I just want to pick up on. One is this use of stories and examples for people to learn to recognize their traits. I think that's rather beautiful, because as I've been listening to you, I was just thinking to myself, this podcast has a flavor of stories, and I've learned a lot about traits, their impact, how they can be misunderstood, how they can be missed, how they can be missed by the person themselves and others, and all of these things. But you've done it through this very lovely unfolding story, example, and that has flowed really nicely, but provided so much knowledge. So I think that's a lovely thing to test, to see how people respond and go, I recognize myself in that story. I think that's very interesting. And then the second thing I guess I wanted to ask after that observation is, have you got how will you test this? Will you invite people? Will you be working alongside specific people?
No, we are I say we because it's my PhD thesis, but I am not on my own.
Okay.
So many people helping aside from my supervisor in Brazil. I have people a mathematician that he's going to help with the mathematical modeling, and he's also on the spectrum.
Wow.
I have two neurologist doctors. One is specialized in autism in adulthood. Actually, he's the only one in Brazil that works with that. He's really interested in my research. And another one is Liz. She's a occupational therapist and on the spectrum, and she works with adults too, and she also works with neuroscience. So each step of my research, they will help, like actually they are helping already, like to figure out the social stories, the traits that really matters, because I summarize them in 90, but we still think that is too much. Perhaps we have to summarize a little bit more. And after we finish like the social stories. And also I will ask some autistic adults to help to know if it's really valid, the social story. I will test this. And after this is ready, I will ask for experts on autism in adulthood. Hopefully some people from the UK, since I got some help in Leeds Beckett University. And when the, let's say, the this research tool instrument is done, we will put all the information ads in a technological tool. It will be like an assistive technology or something like that, and invites autistic adults to read the social stories and to answer the questions. And after that, there is one more step, which I think is the most important, because it's the like the final end. Because the thing is, we need, we don't have support, right? So we started talking about burnout and everything else. We don't have support. And we don't have support, not just because the systems are broken or they fail, but also because nobody knows about these traits and how these traits impact in our lives, in our lives, like in us to be struggling. And so I thought, since we can't wait anymore, if we acknowledge these traits, but after acknowledge, for example, a threat, oh, I'm pedantic, I'm a pedantic person, what should I do? So you can't just change a
trait. No, you can't turn that off.
Yeah, you have to work on that. So we ask the research sample, the research individuals, to think about what they need, what are the, what, let's say in the first person, it's easier for me. So what do I need to have my needs of being pedantic? What do I need? What do I have to do to improve this trait? Like, what can I do to help myself to stop being like that? Since it's in, because people say, oh, it's just someone that is not polite, but it's not that, it's impulsive, because it, it's neurological, you know, there is something related to the neuro thing, like it's an impulse, you being honest is an impulse, and you have to control that impulse. So the first part, people will ask to think about their traits. Oh, what do I have to do to stop being pedantic? And then the person will have to answer, what can I ask for the other people, the people from the environment that I am in, for example, my friends? Each one will have like a space, like at the workplace, at my house, with my romantic partner, with my friends and my family, in the academy, school, you know, academical places. What do I need from the other people to help me with this trait? And then the final question will be, what you have and what you think the other people can do, it's enough? It's, the answer is no, you must think about what else do you need. After that, I will interview people and to get their perceptions about this. But I will not interview them right away. I will let like for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months. So they can use this tool. They can use the final report, because after that, it will have a final report, so they can use this final report in their lives. And then I want to interview and know if acknowledging these traits, they feel more confident or self-advocate for their
Yeah.
traits. For example, we are friends.
Well,
I say, oh, look, Joanne, sometimes, you know, I'm really pedantic, but I'm trying to work on this trait. Would you help me? And you will say, oh, how can I help you? Say, just being patient and call my attention when I am, like, passing the limits. And we work on, we can negotiate. So I want to know if people talk to other people, if they self-advocate, and if they don't, why? What's a difficulties they faced, and what barriers they found, or if they think it was easy, or it was nice, and if this self-advocacy increases the level of not like think that one day you can be out, you can achieve autonomy, which autonomy in the philosophical sense that you can be yourself, express yourself with authenticity, being respectful with people, being respectful with yourself within no moral social rules, because we live in these cultures.
So I'm just going back a few paces because there's there's a lot to take in there. There's certainly several phases to your research, and it sounds like your team are going to be brilliant at testing and trying things out, but you've then got this next stage where you're actually giving people the space and room to try out this and to reflect on, and you gather information of, I guess it's not so much whether it's made them feel more confident, but in what ways does it support them? And if it doesn't, why not? What are the obstacles? What's stopping them from actually having that autonomy to say or ask? Obviously this is, an amazing bit of research because it goes far beyond a lot of the sort of diagnostic tools that we have for these things now that give a diagnosis, or they might point people to different things that they can help themselves with. But if those, like you say, those strategies are missing, most of the understanding to do with those traits, they're just not going to be helpful. So there's a huge gap. But what I particularly like about what you're doing is how you're not just researching how to develop this tool, but you're actually really investing time into measuring the impact of it. And I think that's an area that can get glossed over, is that we can race, as researchers, we can race towards and get a little bit of impact and go, hooray, it's it's wonderful, and this has worked and this has worked. But there's an integrity to the time, duration, and how you're gathering your responses from people participating with the software or whatever learning strategies they find, to find out in what way it does help. Because I think, just from things that I've come across, I think two words that I hear frequently for people with struggling with autism in adulthood is autonomy. And I'm not sure sometimes whether autonomy is understood by others enough of what is meant by that, because autonomy is not just looking after oneself, it is self-expression, assertiveness, or asking, and all of those things. So I think that's a crucial part of this.
I think that autonomy in, for example, in the Kantian, like the Immanuel Kant's way, will be like, which is a philosopher I like a lot, is like you'll be able to have a decent life. So someone to have a decent, in order to have a decent life, must have a job, a vocational career.
Yeah.
You must have, you must be able to pay your bills. You must be able to raise your family if you want to have a family, or to achieve your goals in life.
Yeah.
Respecting others and respecting yourselves. For example, the guy or girl or their, I don't know, the person that mentioned in social media that they have, he or she, enfim, they had a burnout, and after that they, in an age of 35 years old and used to be a successful scientist, and now is living in his mother's basement. This is not a problem. And the other one, for 2 years in his house, the IT engineer, this is not autonomy. Autonomy means, to me, I'm not talking about like the physical condition. I'm talking about being able to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, because you learn some social skills, you know, being able to be with some friends in an environment that you don't really care about the soccer game, but you like to be with your friends, and that's okay when they are talking about soccer game, you are on your phone. It's just because, you know, things like that, because they matter. Because in the end, if you don't have people, if you are only by yourself, you have only your parents, when they die, you will think about suicide. That's why the suicide started to come into the light when some the medical people community started to see that many Asperger people were committing suicide after their parents died, like after why this was happening, just because your parents are like the people that really loves you more than anything in the world. They just accept you the way you are. But after that, you lose that support. The only people that really understands you and not judge you, you are alone, because you struggle. You struggle. Yeah. You have a marriage and you get divorced and your kids don't like you. Yeah. And you just think it's not worth, this life is not worth living, because you are alone. You have so many health, mental health issues, and you're not as good in your job as you used to be. So that's little things, you sum and plus one and more and more and more, and then you think about suicide. Like 6 in 10 people on the spectrum think about suicide. They have suicidal thoughts. And 3 in 10 really try to kill themselves. So it's a really high number. High number.
And so you're actually, this research has a larger remit, because it is about putting into place something that has the opportunity to support learning after a burnout, and learning some skills within adulthood that might mitigate against these more extreme crisis points that people might experience. I find it interesting because, I mean, the journey of this piece of research has got obviously a long way to go, but it seems like there's, you know, now that it's happening, there's got a lot of possibility to it, because of course if you develop this as a learning tool, and you had more people engaged, and there were some aspects of it that were effective, then it's how do you share that? How do you share that in different languages and in, you know, all of these aspects? And of course, you know, I'm really aware that, you know, every country, every region, and every culture has very different responses. And obviously, you're not trying to answer sort of all people with autism and autonomy everywhere. But I can just see this opens up a huge area of new research to take place in terms of seriously attending to strategies and needs that are fundamentally more effective for people who need support. And I can't believe it's been missing for so long.
Yeah, I think that it's just, I don't judge, because science evolves in different paths sometimes.
Yeah.
Going back that time, they were really worried about the kids, about why
yeah.
There are so many kids on the spectrum. So there, I think there are many research in different fields, but I think we have a lot of information that can help people to do applied research, and that's what why I came here, because here in the UK I have seen many people doing applied research,
and yes,
this is really important, because we can no longer wait for support for things going to the theory and then becomes practical. It takes years. No,
too long.
That help, because we don't want to die. So here I've seen so many people, like Professor Fabric is doing a brilliant research on autism at the university. Professor Love works on projects on architecture and nice designs to neurodiversity people.
That's right. Yeah,
don't suffer. You know, in the spaces that are not friendly. This is all applied research, and I think that if we like just give hands with the information that we have already about autism, and stop seeing what is really not really important to those who are trying to kill themselves right now, and we will find good solutions. But the thing is, what I have seen so far, these people that are looking for solutions are people that or they are autistic, or they have relatives on the spectrum, or they have really close friends on the spectrum, and they can't wait no longer. They can no longer wait. It's that.
Yeah.
And so I really want to call attention for those who wants to do research on autism. Just try to connect the dots about things, because there is a big amount of literature over there.
Yeah.
Just trying to find the gap and propose a solution.
Solutions.
Because there are so many gaps, so many problems we face. Like, if
everybody
has a problem.
I think, we're coming to sort of the end of our time, but I really like the way you've brought us to that point of who it is and why we're motivated to do that kind of research, but also how you are putting out a sense of urgency about the need for this research. I really appreciate that, and the need for action and applied research now. I think that's a really important point to end on. But I also, can I just thank you for, I guess, explaining so beautifully where that research has come from, the gap in the research, your research methods of the way you're working with people and where you're placing that, and the whole picture of where you want this to go. You've given such a lovely, comprehensive narrative to what is both fueling this, both personally and politically, which I really appreciate. But something that I didn't expect out of this podcast is the strength of the storytelling, which has really come across, and just the power of the message that you've got to say. which I think is beautiful. And I want to end the podcast there, because it's kind of a call to attention for us all to be aware of, but also in seeking out that highly tuned observation that you've brought here today on looking for those gaps in research in these very, very difficult areas where people are baffled and perhaps don't know what to do. So I just want to say thank you. I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to you. I can't thank you enough. It's been great.
Oh, thank you for inviting me to do it. Thank you very much. I hope to come back soon. Perhaps it will be, get another fellowship to come back. I will try to do one part of the research here, like trying to have some autistic people here to test the tool too. So I really will work hard to get another chance to come back here to do that too.
I would love to chat to you about that once you've done that. I would love a follow up and to just ask how that went. I think that would be really lovely. So do keep in touch and let us know how you're getting on. I think your insights have been very pertinent and very important in the times we're living in, where there's more statistics than ever talking about the impact and some terrible impacts to do with neurodiverse issues. So thank you again, and please do come back.
Thank you for welcoming people. Leads are really welcome.